Welcome back, friends. This is Jeff Holman, host of the Breakout CEO podcast. I am having a blast talking to so many fun, wonderful, insightful guests, and really glad that you're joining us again today. We've got Steve Smith with us. Steve is a coach. Steve is out of California and has, we were talking before the recording started about a couple things that he shares with his clients and with other coaches. And the theme like just appeared, right? It was really apparent. Steve is going to, and I just noticed this, Steve Smith, smart scaling. The theme is S's today, I think. But
dang, that's serendipitous, isn't it?
Yeah. So, but we were talking, you and I, Steve, about some experience you've had and some things that you've learned and observed along the way. I mean, you got 45 years of experience doing this stuff, right? Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, 45 years in business, and that has taken a shift over time. But looking back on it, what I realized was my first 30 years was actually a really good setup for the 18 years I've been in coaching now. So
what was the 30 years?
I was in consumer products manufacturing.
Okay.
And I worked for companies like General Mills and Lysol Chemical. And, at one point I was with the largest manufacturer of burial caskets, which was a really strange business to be in. But, all of these assignments took me to great places. I learned a ton and it was a great experience. And really what it did was it set me up to where I got into this in 2008. And I started to realize that my point of difference in the coaching field, because I do executive coaching for leaders in large companies, and I do business coaching for small business owners. But what it did was it set me up with a really massive background in just how business works.
Yeah.
And, look, there's a lot of great coaches out there. There's some that are infinitely better than I. But when people are looking for help making the business better, which might include making them better, I've got a lot of background in that.
Yeah. And I think just to put this in context, I think a lot of our audience, because we're talking with scaling CEOs, you mentioned some company names. Those guys are established. Those guys are large scale, massive global companies. A lot of our audience, they'll be like, maybe someday I'll be there. Right. But that's one of the values of a podcast like this, is to be able to say somebody who's seen where you're going can help you navigate where you are and set yourself up correctly so that as you go down the path, even though it's going to take you a while, you're going down that path, because a lot of our audience would say consumer product goods. Yeah, I'm in that too. I have one product. I sell it on Amazon. I get it, manufactured in China and shipped over in half a container twice a year, different.
That whole industry has morphed tremendously, predominantly because of the internet and e-commerce and all the things that come along with that. But what I will tell you, having worked on both sides of the fence, big companies make the same mistakes small ones do. It's just when they make them, the financial risk is massive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and that's a point that we've tried to emphasize here on the podcast, that whether you're big or small, you're making the same mistakes. You're dealing with the same issues, different scale. Right. And a lot of our audience, they're dealing with all the same problems at different times. Some people, run into manufacturing issues before they have employment issues, and other people hit the employment issues first before they run into.
So yes,
these are just cycles that we're all in, and the magnitude varies. But the one thing about somebody like you with this, 30 years of experience in large business, is there's a discipline that exists in large businesses that just by virtue of resources and everything doesn't typically exist in smaller companies. But
yes,
I had a guest on recently. It'll be aired before yours airs. And so people will recognize Greg Scow. He talks about buying businesses. He's bought three or four, I think five businesses now. And one of the things he emphasized is I think what we're going to talk about, and that is some of the discipline around running small businesses. Because if you don't have that discipline, your first business might be shooting arrows in the dark and you might've hit something, but your second business, if you're just shooting arrows in the dark again, without that discipline, chances of hitting bullseye twice with your eyes closed is pretty slim, right? So yeah, I think we're going to get into some of that. So
yeah, and you know, like I said, the discipline, a lot of it, quite honestly, the majority of it is getting comfortable learning from your mistakes. You know, sometimes entrepreneurs are so much go, 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 and they're chasing, you know, fame and fortune, so to speak. They don't sit back and just say, okay, what did I learn from my last go around that I don't want to repeat again? And if you don't get into a discipline of going through those metrics to figure out what holes you should be looking for and avoiding, you know, or what decisions seem to be really attractive, but you really need to get under the surface to figure out what the consequences are of doing something like that, then you're just destined to keep repeating, buy it, kill it, buy it, kill it, buy it, kill it. And I have worked with people over the years that were on their third or fourth business venture, and they finally said, I can't do this anymore. And I'm thinking, how did you last this long? I mean, do you have any money left, any homes left? I mean, is it all gone? Because when you keep doing that, you're not going to break even when you get out of stuff like that.
Yeah.
You're going to take a hit.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to talk about this smart scaling discipline issue. But I don't want to skip over the last 15 years. You had 30 years, big business. You know, what happened after 30 years? Like, you made a shift, and is this what you've been doing for 15 years? Or tell me how you got from there to here.
Okay. So the last company I was with was the casket manufacturer, and they were very, very well run. They had an extraordinary market share. I mean, they were the big gorilla in that industry, but it just wasn't a fit. You know, I lasted 6 years, and it was time for me to go. And so that was back in 2008. And at that point in my life, I realized, because I was thinking about this since I was 9 years old, I thought, one day I'm going to own my own business. I just didn't know what it was going to be or when it was going to show up. And so at 52, 2008, I decided this was the time. Now, I still didn't really know what I was going to get into. Like, so a lot of people, you know, I'm out investigating a lot of things. I'm looking at a lot of different business models. And I kept running into people that would kind of look at my background, ask me questions, you know, they're trying to help, right? And I kept getting the responses, have you ever considered being a business coach? And I had heard of it before, more on the executive side by virtue of the companies I'd been with prior. Yeah. But I didn't know anybody that did that. And quite honestly, until about the mid-90s, prior to that, it was pretty much reserved for, you know, politicians and celebrities and, you know, Fortune 500 CEOs. Mm-hmm. The whole business coaching climate had not gotten down to the street level where just about any business or professional could take advantage of it. So I started looking into it. I had the help of a consultant that worked with me. And so when the time was right and the opportunity presented itself, I bought into a startup coaching franchise.
Okay.
And, you know, that was a big chunk of money. I was like, oh my God, you know, you're kind of signing the check and you're thinking, oh, do I really want to do this? Yeah. But, you know, I went and did it, you know, and that was a whole nother story in and of itself. But that is what launched me into what I'm doing today. And even though that company actually went bankrupt 2.5 years in for me getting there.
Yeah.
Because I got in on the first wave of them going from a private company to a franchise operation.
Got it.
And I got a whole bunch of stories about that.
Yep.
But
a lot of franchise owners have stories about franchises.
Yeah. So quite honestly, it was like buying an MBA, you know, but I still look back on those days and realize I would not be where I am today if I hadn't gone through that.
Yeah. I mean, that's how you learn a lot of times. And I've got an MBA, and what I learned in my MBA is very different from what I've learned from the successes and failures and obstacles and, you know, attempts that I've made throughout my business. They're both valuable in their own way, but very different.
Yes, absolutely.
So you took 30 years, leveraged it into the last 15 years or so of coaching. In 2008, well, that was a wild time for a lot of reasons, but
Look, a lot of people like myself left large companies and went out and pioneered their own thing. None of us at that point knew what was happening or what was coming. And so 2009 through about 2011 was some pretty lean times.
Yep.
It was what I considered the purging of the market. Okay. So people who were just dabbling were the ones that washed out quickly. When my company, the company I bought a franchise in, when they finally went BK, within about a year, everybody that had come in that company had gone back to whatever industry or profession they were previously doing before they fell in love with coaching.
Okay.
So I just decided at that point, there is no going back. I mean, I had a great 30 years, but I had no interest in going back into the industry. A lot of it had changed. And so I was definitely looking to pioneer something new. And I just said, okay, I'm on my own. I'm going to have to do it, sweat it out myself. Thankfully, I had a ton of examples from the franchise company of what not to do. So yeah, that's got some value in and of itself. And I just kind of pursued it and kind of made it my own. I changed a lot of the programming to things I thought were going to be more beneficial. And I was fortunate. It worked out well.
That's awesome. I was waiting for you in there to say something like, I couldn't go back. The casket industry was dead to me, but you know, we'll just.
I know that whole industry is full of those kind of jokes, and it's like, no, I
have so many. I have so many questions, but that's probably for another show. So before we talk about some of this smart scaling, we're almost there. But I want to know: is there something that when you look back, you're like, oh, I know exactly where. Like, I teach this now, but I didn't realize then that I was getting the lessons that would turn into the perspectives I have today. What's one of those lessons that you maybe experienced, or one of those things that you went through during that initial, you know, precursor stage to where you're at now that carried over into this stage?
The one thing that was kind of a watershed moment was when I finally realized that this is a big industry. And there's a ton of solo and small company players in this profession, all right? The vast majority of them don't ever make a livable company out of them. So it's something they do while they're working for Wells Fargo or, you know, something like that. It's a side
hustle.
You're
talking about coaching right now. Is that right?
I'm talking about coaching.
Okay. Just want
to
make sure.
And so what I started to realize, you have to be committed to stay in the game long enough to outlast everybody else.
Yeah.
That was a huge learning lesson. And quite honestly, it was one of the reasons that the franchise company didn't work, because they kept changing their strategy and people just got confused. And it was like, okay, let's just wait and see how long this lasts. And so I realized from that, I've got to create a persona of who I am, what my company's here to do. And I've just got to keep hitting it and hitting it and hitting it and hitting it till it's just patently obvious that it's not a workable model. But if you stay it long enough, eventually the market will adapt. They'll start to recognize, okay, I see him here. I see him here. He's talking about this. It's everything looks the same. So there must be legitimacy. Because when you're in a professional service business, it's all about being legitimate.
Right.
You know, it's not like you can say, gee, I have this product you can buy. It's a great product, even though I'm a crappy company. The product's good. That doesn't work in a professional service environment. So you've really got to kind of fine tune who you are in the marketplace and what you do distinctly different from everybody else. And you got to stay the course.
And I imagine there's a way to, cause persistence or grit or, you know, this idea of, you know, overcoming failures enough times that you succeed, that's really prevalent in startup scale up worlds, right? It's like, hey, you gotta be there long enough to find success and you're going to experience failure along the way. But I imagine there's a way to persist, smarter than some other ways that are less smart to persist. Is that right?
It is. And I can tell you that it all boils down to how well do you know your customer? Because the people that I've worked with all these years who have had a hard time of getting their arms around, you know, who am I in the marketplace and what do I do distinctly different than others who are in my space? They've never gone to school on why the customer buys that product or service. And what it is they like or don't like about people that are generally in that business. You know, industries, niches of businesses, they all have perceptions as to what people like or don't like about them. And you have to understand what that is, because you're not just selling to somebody who needs a bottle of water. You're selling to somebody who has a specific requirement about why they buy a certain bottle of water and what it means to them once they take it. That's where you market. That's where you live. You just don't live on the transactional level. Gee, I got all the water you need. You know, here, I'll give you 50% off, you know, and that's where a lot of people, what they run into when they're trying to maintain volume and keep the lights on. They get into that transactional way of running the business. And that's usually the kiss of death. It's very, very hard to get out of that.
Well, I mean, that's insightful. I want to put this one more layer of context around this because I'm just thinking about it as we're talking, and I want to make sure that it's apparent to our audience. But, you know, we talk about persistence. There's that 0 to 1 phase where you're trying to, because you said you need to persist long enough to succeed, understanding who your audience is, right? And I think they're in the scaling stage of business. That's exactly right. Some people are earlier than that, and they're in that 0 to 1. I'm trying to find product market fit, meaning I don't know exactly what my product is. I don't know exactly who my market is, but if I can do it long enough, maybe I can find a fit between a product and a market. So we're really talking about that phase after you know who your client is and persisting long enough to build the brand, to build the success with that. Not necessarily, something else might apply to that phase earlier where you're trying to find product market fit. So,
yeah. And that's where I start walking clients down this path of, you know, your first 5 years have been predominantly internally focused, you know, how do I finance this thing and how do I operate it and who do I hire that can do things that I can't and what kind of vendor relations do I have to put together in order to be able to build this thing out and actually, you know, provide a product for sale. Okay. So that's a lot of internal growth building to get your company up and running and be a viable entity. Once you get established in that and you see things are working on a routine basis and you can kind of count on the results of what you're working on, now you've got to shift your focus to outside the business. Okay. What's happening in the market? Mm-hmm. Is this the kind of market that has some volatility to it, and I've got to constantly be looking for that disruptive next generation product that could take me out? There's the landscape is riddled with large companies that have fallen prey to that kind of stuff. You know, you've got to look at customer trends. You know, customers might like what I'm doing now, but what could cause them to shift and go someplace else? You know, so it's all this, you know, competitors, all those kind of things you've got to constantly be looking at to make sure that you're navigating the landscape correctly. Because if you don't, you can go away quickly. I mean, you can just be considered obsolete or second best. Neither one of those is good. So you really have to look at, you know, where am I going? What does the road ahead of me look like? And do I have what it takes now, you know, people, systems, resources to be able to navigate that road and stay on the path long enough and be able to come out the other side in a good, profitable manner. And most people don't go to that level of detail. And so they get halfway down the road and they're like, oh, crap, you know, I got to go out and find an investor because I'm running out of money, you know, or I've got to go out and find another supplier because this one here just got a huge deal with Walmart. And so they're not supplying me anymore because all their volume is going to that behemoth. So all these kind of things can happen. And they can catch you in the butt because you're not actively staying in touch with those variables that could either hurt you or help you.
Well, so let's go that direction just for a minute. And then I do want to talk, I want to make sure we talk about any frameworks or things like that that apply to scaling. Cause you mentioned stuff before the call that I think is very valuable for our audience, but what are some things what are some signs in a business that you're off track in this area that you're either distracted, you're pursuing other things, does it show up in the revenue? Does it show up in the financial somewhere else? Does it show up in the team? Like where do people start to see symptoms that maybe they're not scaling in a smart way and they need to, you know, identify these issues so that they can then regroup and get back on the right track?
Okay, so scaling has kind of an interesting concept behind it. One, for the entrepreneur, the person that owns the business, the excitement about the prospect of being bigger and more dominant in whatever marketplace you're serving is like a drug. You know, it can completely take over your head.
Absolutely.
And occupy the perspective you have. The reverse side of it is the people that you are working, that are working for you, that are responsible for having to make all the stuff work to get it out to the market, to service the client, take care of the issues, you know, do the billing, whatever it is, those people are under assault because now the growth has gone way beyond the expectation, what they're used to dealing with. It may have gone way beyond the facilities and resources that the company operates with. Mm-hmm. And they're having trouble getting the attention of the owner who's still in la-la land about the future.
Well, and that's common, right? Because a lot of CEOs, they are visionaries. They build something wild because they're kind of wild. They're kind of unhinged in some ways, good or bad, right? And they believe they can do things that nobody else is doing and they can be successful.
So that's the early warning sign that I'm talking about here.
Well, how would can I dig into that? Because I've seen this happen. You know, I've had clients that are on that side of the page, if you will. And I've seen where it's been difficult for team members to necessarily reach the CEO at a level where the CEO is responsive to something other than big wild ideas. Right. So yes. I think there are situations where the CEO doesn't see it and maybe the team isn't able to point it out. So how does a CEO get insight into this when, if that's the case, is there a way to, that they should, they have a flag they should be looking for?
Yeah, actually, what the thing that many of them will stop doing is they'll stop listening to the rest of their organization because they're still wed to this idea of the big, bright future down the road. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of hell-bent on getting there. So anybody that comes in with a complaint or a problem can kind of be put in the bucket of being the naysayer. You're not on the team. You're not aligned with what we're trying to do. So they kind of railroad it, okay, because that's where they want to go. I mean, I worked with a startup solar company a couple of years ago, just a carbon copy of this topic we're talking about now. And the CEO stopped listening to the people who actually were the kind of the first responders of the day-to-day operational problems. So when you start doing that, what you basically transmit to the rest of your organization is, I'm not interested. Don't bring me your problems. Just do the job.
Yeah, don't bring reality back into my office. I don't want it.
Right. And so because they're the ones that are seeing things like customer complaints are going up or product returns are increasing or, you know, people are not buying as much of something because there's another product in the market that's got a better reputation and works better. Mm-hmm. Okay. So all of these early indicators at the ground level don't get addressed because the people at the top don't really want to hear them. That gets in the way of my vision of being the crown jewel here down the road. And so they stop checking in with the places where the problem first shows up. Now, the people that are handling those problems the best they can, they already see what's happening. They know it. And many of them know the solution, but they can't get an audience.
Well, and part of that sometimes can be because the CEO in their visionary attitude is maybe chasing the next big thing, looking for the next product to add, looking for the next business to build. You know,
right.
There's a lot of chasing going on and not a lot of fruits sometimes.
See, okay, so what you just said right there I think is key. When you get into the mode of chasing, you're already on the wrong path.
Okay.
You have to really be able to look down the road and say, what is a viable place for us to be at the end of 2, 3, 4, 5 years? And what are we going to look like when we get there? And now you have a target that you can work towards. You can fill in the gap between here I am today with all the stuff I have, the way I operate. But if we realistically think in 5 years we can be here doing 2.5 times as much business as we're doing now, what does it look like then? What's going to change? What's going to have to change? And you have to define a target, a vision that is so clear and so detailed, you can literally close your eyes and see it.
Yeah.
If you can get to that point, you'll eventually have it.
You know, I think.
But if everything looks kind of fuzzy, fuzzy is what you're going to end up with 4 or 5 years down the road.
I think that applies looking backward too, in a way. We talked on the show a few weeks ago with Greg Scow, who's built several businesses or rather bought several businesses. And I was like, man, how do you know that you're buying the right business? And there is this whole aspect of looking forward, you know, seeing the numbers, what will the business look like when we buy it, exactly like you're describing. But what struck me from that conversation, and I'm sure you see this too, is he talked a lot about looking backward and saying, you know, we don't buy another business if the business we're working on isn't solid, if it's not running smoothly, if something's out of, and he didn't say it this way, but if something's out of place in that business that we've already got, if it's not scalable, if it's not sustainable, if it's not working, why would you buy another business, right? And I think a lot of CEOs, they have the fuzzy vision of the future, but they also have a fuzzy business that's already sort of working, but fuzzy, and they're already on to the next thing. So it's fuzzy plus fuzzy doesn't equal anything but fuzzy, does it?
Right. No. But what you're describing are entrepreneurs who have this, you know, I'm sure you've heard this term before, the shiny object syndrome, you know, and at a very small level, you can go through that kind of, gee, it's going to be this month, or next year, it's going to be that, and change direction a lot. And it's a lot, it's more aggravating than anything else. But once you get volume and scale underneath yourself and the business becomes fairly large and you got a lot of people working for you, making those kinds of visual shifts can be absolutely damaging. And I totally agree with this gentleman you're talking about. You know, if you're going to buy another company and bolt it onto yours because you see synergy, mm-hmm. if you haven't figured out and can demonstrate that the organization you're running today is running top notch, it's running seamlessly, it's impervious to any kind of, self-inflicted wounds. Okay. If you can't say that, don't bring another business in, because all you're going to do is siphon resources out of the one that's not working well to start with.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do CEOs go about, let's say they've got, you know, some stability in their current business or their business model, maybe, we're not necessarily always talking about buying other businesses, but you know, scaling in some manner, scaling with your current audience, scaling with your current product, scaling in a new product. Like, what's the starting point for a CEO who says, I think I've got some stability here. In fact, I look at it. I do. I've got alignment on my team. Like, I think we're ready. What's the next step if they want to scale the right way, the smart way?
If they want to scale the smart way, the first thing I would recommend they do is take kind of a basic inventory of your company in terms of capacity. Okay. Do you have the people capacity to divert attentions over to a newly acquired entity that eventually you're going to want to bring in house?
Okay? Or a new so product that, line or a new or service a new offering. Line
yeah. Or something, yeah. Something like that. You've got to figure out, do you have the people capacity to be able to do that? Or is everybody already 110% and they're underwater and they're just trying to hang on every single day? You've got to look at that. You've got to look at finances too. Can I weather a short-term hit in the pursuit of integrating a new line of product or a new company that we think is a good fit so that we don't end up bottoming out because now we're taking on more than we can finance? That's another one you have to look at. And then finally, you got to look and say, if we've got an idea, does this company follow a couple of check marks, basically? Okay. Is it a business that is already aligned with ours in terms of the customers we're serving? Or is it a completely different customer base for which we don't really have any experience? Do they use operating systems that are somewhat compatible with ours? Doesn't mean they're the exact same, but will they integrate? Can yeah. we take, you know, can bring the new one in and put everybody under the same accounting system or the same CR system or the same, you know, warehousing and inventory management system? Hmm. Can you get some cost savings because now you're just amplifying the systems you've already got in place and you're just adding more product to it? So you have to look at those things. If none of those things check out, then you seriously got to sit back and say, why are we doing this?
Yeah,
because we're just inviting massive amounts of turmoil. And I'm working with a defense manufacturing company right now that's going through this, and their turnover is going through the roof because they have people who are just saying, I'm tapped out. I can't do it. My home life is going to SHIT.
They don't have the capacity. Factor is not working for them.
And they're just running around like people with their hair on fire. And I mean, they're experiencing a lot of growth because of the demand of what they do, but they have so many obstacles and problems in the way that are potentially short-circuiting what they're trying to move to, that the carnage is just significant.
Yeah, yeah. And if why do fuzzy growth if you can do smart growth, right? So,
just really be clear about what you want to do and why you want to do it. And you know what? Sometimes the hardest thing for a CEO to do is say, you know what? this is still a good idea, but we're 18 months away from doing this.
Yeah. Well, what I'm hearing is you outlined three factors. There's capacity, kind of the people, you know, factor. Do your people have capacity? There's money, the resources. You have the finances in place to do it. And then the third was alignment with your existing business model, revenue structure, you know,
your systems,
processes,
right.
Systems.
Your operating systems, right?
Yeah. Yes. So that to me. And so, what if you have alignment on two of those, not all three? What, like, how much alignment, or how well do you need to check off all three of those? And let's say you have capacity and you have money, but you don't have the system. You know, there's not alignment in process and systems, or you have the process systems and you have the capacity in your people, but you don't really have the money. Like how adamant would you be with a company that you're consulting with? You know, you've got to have this level in each of these three areas before you move forward. Is it 100%? Is it 90%? Is it
It's all of this stuff tends to be flexible, and you know, these are decisions. They're trade-off decisions that you're ultimately going to have to make. So here's a good example. Let's say you buy a business that is a great fit for what you're doing, but they serve a different market in a different state. All right. So, you know, you've come to an agreement, you know, you're buying this other company, you're taking over all their stuff, some of their people. You don't really have the system capability to integrate right now because they're working off of legacy stuff, older stuff than you've got. So there's going to be some investment involved. And you don't have the investment now because you want to put the money in other areas that's going to help grow this whole thing. But what you do have is you have people capacity. You have people who have demonstrated that they can take on bigger roles and they can move into other disparate business operations and start to run it and integrate the culture while you're waiting for the other things to show up. If you can't hit the checkbox on all three of those things, then you have to decide where are the trade-offs and what can I do with what I have.
Yeah.
And most of the time, if you have people capacity, you have people that are capable of doing much more than what they happen to be in now, that's a great leverage point for maybe not having systems integration or not having the finances to do other things on an immediate basis. You just take some of your better people, you move them over to that newly acquired business, and you let them start doing the internal work of bringing the cultures and the operating procedures together.
That makes sense.
But here's one thing I will tell you, and you can decide how you want to move with this. Most business owners, most really capable, smart, you know, successful business owners, they depend way too much on tactical thinking. What problems do I have to fix today?
Yeah.
What issues do I have to solve today? You know, what things are on my list or that we need to get done today to this week, this month? And what I try to get people to start orienting themselves to is more strategic thinking, you know, more out of the box stuff that goes down the road and kind of looks at the future. Where do we want to be? And do we have a chance of getting there? And it's a completely different orientation in terms of how you look at stuff. But if you're not willing or capable of doing that, find somebody else in the organization can do it for you, because that's the only thing that's going to ensure that over time, you're still in the driver's seat. You're still a viable business. You still have the ability to take on these other businesses or product lines that you've done a couple of years ago and now be successful with them in your new business structure.
Yeah. I love that you mentioned that, because being strategic is not about just having a vision and chasing a vision and being like, well, I put a plan together and I'm chasing a vision, so now I'm being strategic. It gets back to this, the strategy, the alignment, the allocation of resources, the capacity, the funding,
right.
that alignment, all of that comes into play in a real conversation about strategy, not just this, well, let's be strategic and put together a 12-month plan for the revenue we want to have at the end of the year. It's like, no, you can't be strategic if you're not aligning in those other areas, if you're not deploying the resources towards the, you know, a unified
right.
objective and things like that. So that's a...
Well, look, and I'll tell you, because one of the things that I've done quite a bit of in the last 5-6 years is I work with business owners who have recently bought businesses, you know, through the business broker network. Mm-hmm. They might've gotten out of a former career they were in and said, hey, it's time for me to own my own thing. And so they go and buy somebody else's business. And usually about 18 months in is when the broker, who I've got some connections with a few, they'll call me up and they'll say, hey, I got a client who's calling me back. You know, he bought a business a year or two ago and he's really not doing well. Can you help him?
Yeah.
And so I'll get on the phone with them to try to understand where they are and what they're dealing with and before I decide to work with them. But I will tell you that the biggest single problem I run into with most folks in that arena is that they haven't embraced the strategic thinking concept. And so they're totally nailed down to what's going on right in front of them. And sometimes if you got to pay the light bills, that's all you're going to be preoccupied with.
Right.
But you have to get out of that mindset because it won't lead anywhere good. You know, you're not going to be able to turn around a business that's struggling, let alone be able to scale it at some point down the road, if you don't have the ability to look outside the four walls of your own company and say, what's out there that I need to be aware of and I need to navigate and need to figure out how to deal with.
Yeah. No, I love that you said that because it's, you know, the things we talked about, capacity, funding, alignment for scaling a business in the smart way, they're really no different than, you know, operating a business in the right way, right? If you don't have those for your business, if you're struggling and it pushes you into the tactical mindset instead of strategic or an imbalance between those, like you're going to have the same problem. So that in a sense, scaling smartly isn't, you know, it's different, but maybe not a whole lot different than operating your business smartly to begin with. So maybe put another way, if you're not operating your business in a smart way, maybe you're not set up to start scaling in a smart way either, right?
That's right.
Don't chase that shiny object until you've polished the one that you've got.
And look, I'm working with a kind of an industrial company right now that the guy that's currently running it and owns it is the grandson of the founder. And so it's been around for a long time, but it's got a whole host of problems that he's having real difficulty trying to get past because the grandfather, the way he ran the business, kind of contributed over time to it being in this situation.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I always ask him, gee, if you could go back, you know, 30 years and talk to your grandfather about this, what do you think he would say? And of course, he knows. He worked for him. So he kind of knows how he is, but he said that whole mindset, it was, you know, part of it was the reason that the business got up and became successful. But a bigger part of it is the reason why I'm where I am today. And we can't stay this way. We won't last if we continue doing this. So what I glean from stuff like that is if you have to be willing to put your ego aside, because look, business owners, we all have a little bit of ego. You know, it's our baby. You know, everybody else must think it's ugly, but we don't because it's our baby. But, you know, that's the ego talking. But you have to put that aside and say, what have I been doing that no longer serves me well? And acknowledge what that is and make a valiant effort to either stop doing it or do something different that works better for the conditions that you're in today.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll say I've worked with CEOs who go through that. And, you know, sometimes it's a really drastic eye opener. It's like things aren't going well. Maybe I just need to get out. Maybe I'm just done. And I don't know that that's always the answer, right? But that's sometimes the initial response.
That's the emotional reaction to becoming aware of the fact that as good as you were and as much as you've done to get it where it is now, you're now starting to become part of the limitation.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean you can't get through it. But you know, look, most people that have been in business 25 or 30 years, at some point they start getting this kind of short-sighted mindset. You know, when's it time for me to get out? When's it time for me to enjoy my life as opposed to putting it all into running this business? So the idea of shifting your mindset and starting again by looking at things differently is sometimes just way more than they're willing to do.
Before you share that, I want to make sure our audience has a chance to connect with you. So let's make sure that they get your information, how to connect either via your website, LinkedIn, wherever you like to connect, and anything else you'd like to add to that so that they know, you know, how to work with you if they do connect or want to reach out.
Okay. So for everybody that has that inquiry, I tell them, go right to my website. It's growthsourcecoaching.com. And there is all kinds of stuff on there. I mean, you can find out my background, where I come from, what clients I serve. I keep a roster of all that for 17 years, you know, so it's all that on there. I've got tons of videos that explain certain concepts about management and leadership. I've got interviews, you know, from other podcasts I've done. I've written articles over the years on various skill building. So people are going to get a ton of value, whether or not they decide to work with me or not. That doesn't matter. What I want to make sure is that they walk away from that visit in better shape than they came. And if along the way they decide they want to have a conversation, they can fill out one of the inquiry boxes on many of the pages, or I put my office number and my email on every page. So it's real easy to get a hold of me if you want to do that.
Very cool. And that was growthsourcecoaching.com, right?
Right.
Cool. Right. So go there if you want to connect up with Steve. Let's end on these characteristics, one or two characteristics that you see in CEOs who are poised for scaling, who are kind of equipped to do that the right way. What do those look like?
All right. So the biggest one is they realize immediately that they don't have all the answers. And they're willing to go find people who have the certain skill set or experience level to fill the void of what they know they're going to need, but they're just not the person. So they're totally willing to back up and fill their inner circle with people who are going to actually get them there. You know, they might be the captain that's, you know, pointing the direction, but they're relying mostly on a well-developed team to actually move the company in that direction. So I think that's huge. Is recognizing you are not the one that's going to do everything. You've got to build a team that's going to get you there.
Yeah.
The other thing you've got to recognize is depending on what it is you're trying to scale, you've got to be kind of settled in terms of who that other person is that's going to join your ranks. Sometimes scaling doesn't come by you just going out and finding another business or product line or buying it. Sometimes it's because you decide to partner up with a venture capital firm and they underwrite the scaling opportunities. But now what you've done is you've brought in a finance partner who's going to basically start making a lot of decisions. And so you've got to be willing to share the stage in the pursuit of making something bigger and better that eventually you'll call your legacy.
I love that because you've just shared two things that I think line up 100% with two of the three factors you just mentioned. There's like that capacity, the human capacity, having the right person on the team, and then with a VC funding or other funding sources, you know, having that financing factor. So there's a lot of consistency in the messaging here. So
I love consistency.
Well, I love that we've had a chance to chat, get to know each other, that I've been able to hear some of your insights and stories. It's been great having you on the show, Steve. Thank you for coming in.
And well, Jeff, thanks for having me. This has been really great. I've enjoyed your style and the way you kind of navigate this conversation. It was really good.
Good. Thank you so much. It's the only style I have, so I'm glad it worked today. And
it works, right?
For our audience, thank you so much for joining us. We're always glad to have you. We want to share insights with you that help you tackle problems, help you maneuver past the plateaus, help you overcome the obstacles in your business and find those breakout moments. And so, you know, feel free to share this episode with somebody if you know someone that might like it. If you want to be on the show, you know, reach out to me. I'd love to have smart people like Steve and our other guests come on the show, share their stories, and hear about breakout moments that can help other people navigate their struggles and successes as well. Thank you so much for joining us this week.
All right. Take care. Thank you.